I mean, none of them are very nice.
Yeah, but Dr. Blight rules. Sexy ass lid suit.
Cold open.
I mean, maybe problematic. Sexy ass lead suit.
Too late. Oh! Wind,
water, hot, go planet! By your powers combined, I am Captain Planet! Captain
Planet. Welcome to a new, that's right, new episode of Gaia's Gang. I'm Ariel Van Cleve along with
Andrew McCardell
and
Emily Smith.
And it's been a while since we've chatted about Captain Planet, but here we are. And Andrew is going to remind us why we're even sitting in this room all together again.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us, Andrew.
We're back.
But why?
To rewatch episodes of Captain Planet, reminisce about the 90s, our youths, and re-raise the very important issues that came up in this cartoon.
That's right. Very important issues. And it seriously has been like a super long time. I think we joked in the last episode that it was going to be like the second quarter of 2019.
Basically, yeah.
That's about right.
It was prescient.
But now, today, we're going to talk about episode 6 called The Conqueror. But first, before we get into that, we're going to do a recap of the previous episode that included the lovely voice of Meg Ryan.
Oh, hell yes.
And Andrew, tell us about that.
Yeah, I think we all agree that the last episode, episode 5, Deadly Ransom, was the best of the bunch so far.
Yeah.
But it's been so long, and I have kind of a hazy memory of exactly what happened, but we'll make this short and sweet. Here we go. So the Planeteers, their briefing from Gaia on Hope Island is hacked into by Dr. Blight, voiced by Meg Ryan, and her computer servant, Mal. And they basically level this threat that they have a bomb at her Antarctic facility or something, and blah-blah-blah-blah. She lures the Planeteers out to her Antarctic facility. They go. It turns out that she has this whole elaborate plan to trap Captain Planet.
Right.
Her plan for domination is directly tied to trapping Captain Planet. So the Planeteers make a couple of blunders. Captain Planet gets snagged. The villains are Dr. Blight, Meg Ryan, her assistant Mal, who's like a computer-generated head thing that mm-hmm. we compared to Max Headroom, mm-hmm. and a character named Duke Nukem, who is a big, dumb mutant, who is bright yellow with a red mohawk who, like, absorbs nuclear energy. Anyway, they capture Captain Planet, hold him captive in, like, a snow globe or something like that. I think
it was, like, in, like, a mountain, though, too, wasn't it? Or was that the previous lair?
No, it wasn't a mountain. Yeah. And the kiddos have to sneak back in with a sort of Trojan horse maneuver where they hide in barrels of what is ostensibly a lifetime supply of toxic waste for Duke Nukem.
Because Duke Nukem's so stupid.
And they're able to defeat Duke Nukem, save Captain Planet, and then Dr. Blight and Mal escape. But that was kind of it. But it was a good episode.
Yeah, it was. I think it was the most plot-driven one that made the most sense thus far.
And we praised Meg Ryan's Dr. Blight, I think, is the strongest villain we've seen yet. Mm-hmm. But noted a little bit of, I don't know, discomfort, or it was a bit of a mixed bag. She was wearing a sexy lead cat suit to protect her from
hot
Duke
pink.
Nukem's hot pink. Yeah. So, I don't know.
But then the other episode was episode 4 right before that one, and that would involved who did that involve? Who was the bad guy in that one? Who was the baddie?
That was Verminous Scum.
Verminous Scum, that's right.
And yeah. Rat Rot.
And Rat Rot. Yes. And that was like a... That also was a pretty decent episode, though, too.
I feel like
those two were plot-driven and got the thing done that they needed to get done in their 21 minutes.
Mm-hmm. But Cousin Danielle did raise one concern about episode 4, which was that she was a little annoyed by the TV magic that happened when, you know, people had rat rot and then they instantly were cured. And
not even just like TV magic, like it's cartoon, but like TV magic. I love that there's mm-hmm. like a distinction. It's
yeah. Good. And in her opinion, it should have taken years to heal from rat rot and to change back. Mm. Because otherwise, what is it? Instant genetic modification. And that's terrifying.
Yes.
Yes.
Fair.
Mm-hmm. Along with that, Cousin Danielle also, she's been battling a rat herself in her apartment in Chicago, which we've all been there. And I mean, I can confirm this is a crafty little rat that she had really tore up some things. Very clever. Anyways, it's a a long list of things that the rat did to evade first the glue traps and then the other traps. She advises steel wool as a deterrent. Anyways, the rat met its end when it got trapped under the sink, dragged itself to the cabinet doors, rammed into them for a while, and then her building manager came, shut the door, apparently hit it with a hammer, and disposed of it.
And we're in trouble with PETA again.
Anyways, there's picture proof of this that she sent of this
the carpet being chewed, not the rat being dead, though, right?
That's
careful
true.
With how you're wording that.
This is why you're the lady-o. The lady-o. Is that what they call it? Ladies in radio?
What?
They do now.
That was a terrible summary.
It was grisly.
I think we'll have to cut it all.
No.
Absolutely not.
All right, moving on.
Okay, so those are our questions, comments, and concerns from our listeners. Thank you very much. And again, after you've heard this episode, really looking forward to hearing from anyone who might have additional comments, either about Emily's making up of words or summaries of various things, or just this not ideal episode. This is one of the poorer ones that we've seen so far. This one's called The Conqueror, and just not a lot. It was really lackluster.
Yeah, this one was bad for reasons I think that are a little bit different than the Hoggish Greedley episodes, which it was the very first episode, so fine, that's excusable for that reason. And the other Hoggish Greedley episode, the one where they went to Thailand, those were both bad because they were just kind of like low stakes and dumb, and the villain kind of stinks and he's very narrow. This one is like a big swing and a miss for something much larger and more interesting.
Yeah, and it starts, again, like some of these episodes are really just starting with like action. Like the very first thing, right out of the gate, they're like, we need to figure out a way to get Captain Planet in. And they're just flying around, and then they see that like this meteorite hits an island, and they're like, oh, well, at least nobody's living on it. But then Gaia's like, now hold on, there are animals there, so you have to go save this island. So like they wind up there.
Which I feel was a missed opportunity to talk about the importance of islands in studying evolution and biodiversity. Islands always are so interesting for that reason. They don't mention it, but it's subliminal.
Like a la the Galapagos Islands.
Galapagos Islands, Madagascar, too, very, even Australia.
But this is why, like, this... It's again, it starts out badly. Like they don't explain anything. They're just sort of like, well, you should understand, like, we should save them because of the animals, and not really like understanding like biodiversity is important, like the world. But instead it's just like, but they're cute and we should be concerned about them, and now they're on fire because of a meteorite that hit the island.
What was the island that Dr. Doolittle went to in The Voyages of Dr. Doolittle? Did you guys ever read that book?
No.
Damn it. I think he went to an island that like probably was loosely based on like the biodiversity in like the Galapagos or Madagascar or something, and it was cool as hell.
But it's so I don't know, that was a poor way to start. And they get there,
also they're in the air, this meteorite is like streaking toward the planet, and they're already in the eco jet.
Is meteor
on their way, like, huh?
This is a good point, sorry, a 90s point.
Yeah.
Clarification. So I remember doing a book report on, or my first research report on meteors and asteroids. A lot of little index cards, flipping through the library card catalog, for those of you that remember the Dewey Decimal System. So it feels very 90s to me. I don't know if it is. Were we worried about meteors in asteroids in the 90s?
Yeah, I feel like that was like a thing that like just space junk just pummeting toward the Earth. Yeah. And everything just evaporating because of something horrible happening.
We don't seem worried about that now.
I don't know if you've seen a little film called Armageddon.
Yeah, but that was like
Bruce Willis and
Ben Affleck.
Wasn't
that like late 90s?
Yeah, that was later. Deep Impact. I think maybe the same year.
Yeah, like they're all like the same movie.
Deep Impact actually wiped out like half of the eastern half of the United States, which was awesome.
Right. Yeah, I think there was like a legitimate concern about those things, and there was more disgust, and it just kind of got trapped in our thought processes of like, oh God, what if this actually happens?
Do we have
like
a system for preventing it now? Is that why we're not worried, or we just decided?
Well, yeah, because like as you know, those who saw Armageddon, we just have to send a bunch of dudes up in space, and then they have to like.
Oil drillers.
Yeah, like oil drillers who are just going to mine it to smithereens.
Yeah. Well, they had to drill into the asteroid and plant the bombs in the center because if they just hit the outside, it would just break off smaller fragments, but that's why they needed Bruce Willis to save the day.
Yeah, we want to be scientifically accurate here on Guy's King.
This is far afield, but we're going to talk about music in this episode anyway, so here I go. The Aerosmith song, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, that Emily was giving us a lovely rendition of a few seconds ago.
Thank you.
Is, maybe not still, but at the time, was Aerosmith's only number one hit ever.
Really?
I don't think that's still true. I think they've had one since then, but at the time it was their first, and it's written by Diane Warren, who wrote My Heart Will Go On.
Really?
Yes. So.
Interesting.
Aerosmith. Andrew is upset about this because, I don't know if you know this, he's a big fan.
Of Diane Warren.
Yes. But Aerosmith has like a litany of incredible songs that came out mostly in the 1970s. Some really fun ones in the late 80s and early to mid 90s.
Right.
But like, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, which is a fine song, being their first number one hit just breaks my heart.
All right. So they are floating around in their little eco jet, and suddenly they're just able to like anticipate problems. Is that what they're doing? Do they have like sensors around the world that they're able to experience things? Or Gaia's like the one that can feel something has entered her atmosphere. So now she's like, hey, this meteorite's coming at the Earth and it's going to hit this island. Let's go head it off, or at least go deal with it. So they get to the island, and all of their powers that they try to get to stop like the fire that's engulfing this island really quickly. Just makes everything worse.
Yeah.
Like, and I was, because like when they were like, oh, we'll just get some water. Like, we'll get water. And it's like a little like pond or something that she pulls water from. She's like, this will solve it. She's like, it's not working. And then there was
they didn't try very hard.
No, yeah. and the wind was
a hilariously bad idea.
And I was
idea.
Like, why would you blow the fire around? Yeah. Don't you know that oxygen is not a good idea for fire? Like, what are you doing? And then there was additional fire to create a fire break, but you don't create. No, they should have just called Captain Planet in the first place and said, they were like, well, guess it's not working. Probably should call that guy.
Yeah. And it matters that they're each individually far too weak to deal with this scenario. It's like a bit of foreshadowing for what happens in this ridiculous episode.
Yes.
But yeah, it's another one where they summon Captain Planet almost hilariously early.
Like so it's fast.
Just, yeah. You know, in a show that's supposed to be about what young people can do and achieve, you know, on their own.
Turns out nothing.
Yeah, well, it turns out as soon as there are some problems that are just immediately and obviously too big, and so I guess we got to summon our like super eco Superman.
But they work together,
right? Well, because that's the thing. I was just thinking that because they talk a lot about needing to work together, but also the need to be like individuals, but also the need to work together and be individuals at the same time, and not relying on other people, but also relying on other people. There's a lot of conflicting. Like, they haven't quite figured out yet the driving mission of the show, I feel, which is a whole other problem that Captain Planet needs to deal with. But when Captain Planet arrives, he, like, creates a typhoon. And then that becomes a thing. And I'm like, how do the kids even, like, they're just standing there like, oh, there's a typhoon. I'm like, you can't even be able to talk right now. Like, that's crazy. That's TV magic. Like, you should be, like, falling down on your ass.
That's true.
But whatever. And also, he says these ridiculous things, like, as he's getting ready to create this typhoon.
He drops a Bob Dylan reference for the kids.
God.
Says a hard rain's gonna fall. And he even said it. He said it with, like, the Bob Dylan voice, kind of. He was, like, doing a bit.
Yeah. He's always doing a bit, though. Like, Captain Planet is the cheesiest motherfucker. Like, he's always saying shit like that. Always.
And can I ask you all, because I don't remember this being a thing, but maybe it was. Hmm. Wheeler's t-shirt...
It was a thing.
It was a half.
So it was a thing.
Andrew didn't know because Andrew tucked his whole t-shirt into his jeans.
Like a reasonable and very cool kid would do.
I guess I did not know you in the 90s, but shortly thereafter.
Half tuck is a thing.
Yeah, he was a full tuck kind of guy.
Why?
Because it's cool.
And I'll have you know
it's everyone knows you're cool
the
and chill.
The half tuck is back. I do not know if you have noticed.
I've noticed
a lot
like
of things
side?
Are back, but yeah, it's just and it's so hard to pull off. Honestly, I've found myself standing in front of the mirror recently trying to get the right amount of tuck because high waisted jeans are back and the tuck is back and it's I've never been able to pull it off.
No. I don't go for a half tuck. I don't do any of that kind of stuff. But it's like a thing.
That was an extreme half tuck. And how did he get it so extreme with a t-shirt? I mean,
yeah, it looked like he was wearing like a button-down shirt that one half of it was just
easier
out,
to achieve with a button.
Which just makes him look like a slovenly.
Yeah,
like,
but that's cool. That's cool.
I will tell you, Andrew had to rewind after seeing the
because he couldn't
tuck.
Believe
he
it.
Was like, "What is up with Wheeler's shirt?" I didn't even notice myself. I just thought he looked cool.
I noticed it, but I was like, "That's a cool look for a cool guy."
Yeah, I'm not
you're
on
just,
board.
You're just not buying it. That's fine. Well, then, like Wheeler would outcool you in a cool competition because he would half tuck his t-shirt in while wearing his fire ring and walking around like. Challenging people to fights.
That's true. Andrew blossomed later in life anyways.
Can't argue with that.
So, okay. So they realize that like they everything calms down and Captain Planet like fixes everything and he's like, "All right, I'll see y'all later," basically, and then he just disappears.
There's a rainbow. It's a very distinct rainbow.
There's a rainbow.
The day.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
It's like
it was beautiful.
It's like he clears the smoke from the meteorite striking. And like a really bad rainbow.
Yeah.
Just pops out.
Just to let everybody know that like he's a really great guy and he's taking care of business. So he solves the problem. Then the kids are back left on their own trying to figure out, okay, well, what's next? And they go find the meteorite, but it turns out it's not actually a meteorite. It's like a ship. It's a ship.
I was so confused what that was.
It almost looks like an egg or something. It's perfectly spherical.
Yeah.
It cracks, like a little, it cracks open.
But it also had like a little design on it. But then, so like it cracks open, but then there's an, like it has like a shield around it or something.
Yeah, it was like a rocky shell.
Like
something.
A rocky shell that also disappears and you can see inside of it as long as he opens up this. There's a man inside of this ship named Zarm. Yes. Zarm.
Zarm.
Ugh. And he's not a good villain. Let's just get that right out of the way. He's not a good villain at all.
Zarm comes out. He has a British accent.
Mm-hmm.
He's voiced by Sting.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Continuing in the line of...
Esteem.
Yes? Sting?
Sting. British?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, Barry.
Mm-hmm. So he's not... I mean, he's doing like an epic affect, but he's preserving his British accent.
But he's still being Sting.
He's still being Sting, yeah. You can kind of... I don't think... If I hadn't looked beforehand, I don't think I would have known that it was Sting.
Right.
But... And so, as with our other celebrities, just to sort of situate like where Sting is at, he's a massive star in 1990.
Yeah.
The Police's career has essentially wrapped up. I mean, they've obviously been back together since then and everything like that, but all of the big Police hits that you know have come and been out for many years.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a couple of solo albums at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So he's an enormous, enormous star. So
right.
It's another,
this is a big get.
It's a big get. My personal feelings about Sting, he's a good dude. He's done...
I have no personal feelings about Sting. Just
he's like a less annoying Bono in that he's done a lot sort of like four different like good causes, you know, hunger, various humanitarian crises, things like that. He's a good dude. He has a lot of really great tantric sex, I understand. I feel like that's been a thing
in the
news.
I do know that about him. I don't know why.
He's like into yoga. That's a thing. Allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
However, I just am not a fan of the music. It's just, to me, it's like, all of it's like a 5.5 out of 10.
Oh,
I don't ever need
hot
to hear a Sting song.
Well, dang. And Sting you're talking about, not Police. Sting.
Both.
Oh.
I feel, yeah. And this is weird because...
Shots fired.
I feel like I grew up, like, music was very big in my house. My dad... Huge fan of, you know, classic rock, kind of the gamut from, like, you know, Beatles, Led Zeppelin, all the Pink Floyd, all these kinds of things. And I feel like I went through a phase where when I was really young, you know, I liked what my dad liked.
Yeah.
And then when I was a teenager, I was like, yeah, I like Green Day instead. Of course. He actually likes Green Day too, so that wasn't even rebellious of me. And then I sort of have come back to liking mm-hmm. a lot of the classic artists that he really likes. And he's a big fan of Sting and The Police, adores them. And even though I've come back to many of these artists and love them now, just fucking not Sting.
Just not Sting.
No.
So I guess then to you it makes sense that he would be in such a lame episode.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Made sense to me. Of course this episode is like, it's not the worst episode of Captain Planet,
it's like
but
a,
it sure
it's
as
like
hell
a 5
not the
out of 10.
Best.
It's like yeah. a 5 out of 10. Like a
big old bowl of meh.
Yeah, so he's our bad guy, and he's saying that he can't come out of his little ship. They have to come into his little ship. And I was trying to get an understanding of how big the ship actually was.
He also seemed to be very large. Like the size that he was, I feel like, looked inconsistent. Sometimes he looked like he was twice as tall as the Planeteers.
That's called perspective, Andrew.
All right. She does got you there. Well, because like they were walking toward it, and then like, and so he was explaining to them like, hey, Planeteers, like,
come into my ship
and come hang out. And they're like, I don't know, man, like, I'm not sure if it's a good idea. And then he starts like persuading them with like a little flash of the old eyes. Like, it's not hypnosis exactly, but it's just enough where like it breeds their curiosity. And Wheeler, of course, is the very first one to like go running toward the ship. And he's like, cool, I'm not a chicken, like all this bullshit stuff, because he's
this
such an
ass.
This
is never a good sign. Anytime Wheeler's quick to do something, I feel it's everyone gonna go bad. Else, yeah, everyone else should be like, caution.
Yeah, he like taunts him.
Yeah.
Into
yes.
coming, after glamoring him a little bit with the red flash of his eyes.
Yeah, because he does that, and then he starts taunting him, and because it's Wheeler, it takes 2 seconds for him to be like, fuck you, dude, like, I'm totally going to take care of this. So then he goes down, and everyone's like, I don't know, but then he does the same, like, you know, thing to everybody else, and they're all fully on board, and they all want to go down.
Except
for Mati.
The one with heart.
I was going to see if Emily remembered his name.
No, I was going to help her.
Yeah, no, Mati. That. And it seems like, I can't tell if it's that he's immune to the enhanced, maybe he just doesn't have any
control.
Baseline aggression that the others do, or competition.
Or like,
he senses that.
Or his heart protects him. He knows it's not a good idea.
Well, I mean, he is like, I feel like there's a little bit of mind control ability as part of heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that maybe
like
they just cancel
game recognize game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he knows he's not supposed to go in there. He doesn't go in there.
Right. He's like, that seems like a bad idea, so I'm not going to do it. And like all the rest of them go in there, and he's like talking about what a wonderful world he comes from and how incredible the whole thing is. And
the villain.
Oh, yeah.
The
so he's from another planet.
Yeah. He's from another planet.
Thus
like,
he claims.
So he's explaining like, oh, here's my world, and this is what it looks like. And he's like showing all these photos, and everyone's like, oh, this is what Gaia's always wanted. This like really chill place. Like, look how wonderful and peaceful everything is. Ooh. So like,
There's a couple of bits of, sort of foreshadowing, you know, no spoilers yet, but of what and whose Zarm really is.
Yeah.
The first one is that he's got this orb, and when he's showing them his home planet that's so advanced and prosperous, I think Kwame says, this is like Gaia's planet vision.
Yeah.
It's like kind of the same thing. And something else that is interesting is that, so Gaia has very long, lustrous black hair with like accents of like gray locks in it, and he's got kind of the same thing, like a big full head of dark hair with some gray accents.
Oh, look, you know, noticing things.
And something else that this reminded me of, and I almost wonder if this is the origin of that aesthetic choice, there is a, and we can cut this if it sucks, but I thought it was interesting, there is a series of fantasy novels that came out in the 80s that I've recently decided to read, called The Belgariad, and one of the biggest characters, one of the main characters in those books is this sorceress named Polgara, who has very long, dark hair with one gray lock accent.
Hmm.
And this would have been just a few years before Captain Planet came out. My suspicion is that Ted Turner, one of his creative team members on Captain Planet was a big fan of the Belgariad. And that Gaia is inspired by Polgara, the sorceress.
I was going to just go end with Cruella DeVille. But
also that.
I think that's from, what is it? Lady, no, not Lady and the Tramp, Dalmatians, 101 Dalmatians.
That's right. So maybe it's that, maybe it's Cruella DeVille. Who knows? Who knows exactly what the inspiration is? But that's good of you to notice all of these things, because like I was more taken aback by everyone knows who the Planeteers are. Like everyone always seems to know exactly who they are. They've been doing this for like 2 seconds, but now they are known galactically.
Yeah, I really want to know what the passage of time.
Like it's
been.
It's not even like, oh, like the word's gotten around with all the baddies. Instead, it's like this guy's like living on another fucking planet.
And he knows.
And he's like, oh, I'm fully aware of who you guys are. And I happen to have 5 iron fists just for you dum-dums to, like, wear. Everyone's like, oh, chill. That's super cool. Like, let's totally put these on.
But they were convinced by the good cause, right? So this is the thing that I thought was kind of interesting.
Yes.
And a good lesson, right? This powerful guy who's suspicious. He's in an orb. He's a spirit. Yeah. Something's not right about this, but yeah. But he convinces the kids that he has this good vision for the world. So Andrew goes off on his tangent or inspiration. Mine was, this is like an important commentary that's happening right now in society, right? There's this idea that you can... a lot of companies essentially are recruiting kids right now, saying that you can have, look at our awesome... essentially corporate social responsibility, come work for these like big companies and look at all the good work we do, which really is cause to millennials. But you should question that, guys. you should have a question about that. Anyways, this is a good new book called Winner Takes All by Anand Giridharadas that like talks a lot about this idea that it's like the common recruiting thing that's happening now. Anyways, that was my tangent that I went on, Andrew.
Oh, that's a better tangent than mine.
I mean, I think that there is something to that though, because there is like he makes it sound really good to the kiddos, and it's like, here's what you can do. There's, if we enhance your powers in some way, that means you can do even more good,
right,
than
you can
you
do 100 times better
and
good
like
stuff.
And they just had the recent circumstances where they couldn't fix it on their own and they had to call in for backup. So if they could have just handled it by themselves, it would have been better. Yeah. And all they want to do is be good.
Yes. So this guy's like, I'm a little sympathetic to how they end up in this mess.
Sure. But at the same time, like, they were also kind of hypnotized.
True. There were nefarious superpowers involved in this.
Yeah, he definitely revved up their aggression and competitive instincts.
Oh, yeah. And, like, Wheeler is the first one who's just like, cool, iron fist, and starts putting it on, but he can't get it on because he's wearing his Planeteer ring.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, well, you can't. Wazarm was like, you can't wear it if you're wearing that dumb ring. You got to take that shit off. And he's like, oh, okay. And everyone's like, whoa, bud, hold on. Is that a good idea?
Seems bad.
And he's like, who cares? And because he's fucking Wheeler.
The iron fists, by the way, are these gauntlet-looking things
that
very closely resemble... the Nintendo Power Glove.
I was gonna say they look just like the Power Glove,
which was just a piece of shit thing that nobody ever used. It appeared in the movie The Wizard with Fred Savage. The Power Glove is one of those pieces of technology that wasn't that successful, but I feel like everybody had that one friend who just had all of the Nintendo things.
I did not have a single friend with a Power Fist or Iron Fist.
I vaguely, it only had 2 games and it sucked. So nobody ever used it. It never took off. But it was sort of like the. Much too soon before the technology was ready, like Wiimote style. It was supposed to have motion something. It had the controller on the back. But that's what these things look like.
Yeah, yeah. They looked really similar to, like, the Power Glove controller. And I was like, okay, well, that's you know, that's going to work for the time. Because everyone's like, oh, Power Glove, cool, right? So they put all these things on. Like, each of them put it on. And after they've been coerced into doing so, but also, like, through manipulation and through, like, legitimate hypnotists. Like, whatever. So they wind up doing all of these things. They put their little gloves on and they go test out. They start testing out their powers. Or do they like go immediately and like go on a mission from this guy?
They test them.
Okay.
And they're just all roided out, basically.
That's right. Because like the tidal wave is like, you know, half a mile high.
It's 2,600 feet high.
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
Andrew was scoffing at half a mile, but I, in my mind, I was like, is it because that's too small or too big?
It was a big tidal wave.
I don't know how big waves typically are.
Well, everyone was like impressed by it. I mean, at least like, I mean, Guy was impressed by it. And then like, why am I having a hard time with all their names?
Linka.
Right now? Linka. And then like, then he was
to me too.
And then he was like, hey, you know, you could totally just destroy her shit with your shit. So you should just do that. So then,
oh,
Linka's
true.
Like,
then there's this like
wind.
Sexist taunting. Yeah. Like, are you going to let a girl outdo you?
Yes.
I was like, ugh.
Yeah. So there was a lot of like, and then Kwame like did his thing. And then there was additional like poking and prodding. And they all just kind of got super competitive with each other. Yes. Like in a big way.
Kwame raises an archipelago.
Yeah.
And then Wheeler obliterates it all.
Yeah.
They are really roided out with, yes, with their iron fists.
And like, and they're not scared by it. They're like, cool.
Did you pick up on the command words thing too?
Yes.
So this terrible villain is like, he gives him the iron fist and he says, well, I have to teach you the command words. Yeah. It turns out the command words are the name of their element, plural,
yeah,
plus of conquest.
Yep.
That was it.
That was it.
So waters of conquest.
I know. I was like, this is a weird thing to do. But okay, I guess okay.
I mean, it's more complicated than wind.
Right.
Winds of conquest. It's a lot more syllables.
Winds of conquest with an iron fist.
Mm.
And then you can just destroy worlds, which is like really the whole point of this thing. But we don't get like privy to that until a little bit later. So meantime, like Mati is wandering around like talking to Gaia and he's like, this isn't good. I'm really concerned and upset. What are we going to do about it? And then Gaia's like, kind of figuring out like what the game actually is, and she's like, wait, did you say Zarm? Like,
yeah.
Zarm is like, used to hang out here on Earth. He was a spirit of Earth, but he was a bad guy, and he like what, got booted out or left or something? Like, how did that happen?
It's not clear.
I think she says that he did go to another planet,
right?
And he wanted, I can't remember why. I don't think he was kicked out or anything. I think he just wanted his own planet
just
to kind of dominate.
Right.
And so is it at this point that she says that, oh, it's not like this peaceful advanced planet anymore. It got all, they were driven,
yes,
by like war and, yeah, they obliterated themselves.
Yeah. So she like explains all this stuff where she's like, here's the actual deal. Like, it's not a peaceful place. Like, it's all rotted away and it's gone.
Oh,
and,
yes,
and like, we blocked out the sun and because of nuclear war. And yada,
at this
yada,
point, I realize that this Zarm is Elon Musk, right? Because I...
Go on.
Well, he's like, you know, we have to... Zarm must have been like, we have to go to another planet because Earth is clearly not long for this world.
Right.
That seems punny, maybe. I'm not sure. But this is the whole Mars thing, right? Like, we have to get there. This is Elon Musk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just double checking.
But then, like, but then he gets there and he destroys that one.
Well, it didn't work out. But it's this, mm-hmm, idea. And I think this has always been something of an idea circling around environmentalism that, like, well, really, we'll resolve the damage. We're messing up Earth, but it's okay. We'll figure out how to inhabit another planet.
Right.
So I think this has always been, someone has always had this idea, and now most notably Elon Musk is one of them. But
he's really going for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Zarm and Elon Musk, the same.
Yeah.
And same Richard Branson.
I don't know who that is.
So it turns out that this planet, has been destroyed. So he's come to like basically conquer Earth. Like, it looks like he wants to like take Earth now because like he fucked up the other one, so now he's gonna go fuck up this one next.
Yeah. And so, but he originated as an Earth spirit, and so we were talking about this earlier, but this raises a whole host of messy questions about what exactly the hell is going on here. So
yeah,
now we've got, there's not just Gaia, she's not just the only spirit of the Earth, there's at least one more. Is
right,
there is there a pantheon
but
of
could
them?
There be more?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And are they all like sort of aspected differently? Like, he seems to be a spirit of war,
right?
Are there many others? Are we going to see more? I guess time will tell. But
right,
but then there's this whole thing where he really can't, other than manifesting as Gaia does, as the spirit,
mm-hmm,
when they're doing their training, he physically stays in his ship because he says he can't enter,
yeah,
the world.
Yeah, he can't do it. Yeah.
Until, and I guess I'm getting ahead a little bit, but Gaia reveals to Mati that if the Planeteers abandon the path of peace, she will become mortal and then Earth can die.
Like, what the fuck?
That's
what
that's
the
new.
fuck?
That is new.
That's some crazy ass
Earth
stakes.
Will die if she dies.
But that's not clear. And yes. Zarm can take her place.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's his goal. If she becomes mortal, he can take her place as the spirit of the Earth. But again, there were a couple of them before. I don't understand how any of it works.
Right. There's like a lot of like origin story stuff that was coming in that like wasn't done well, and it was confusing, and it's all bad. Like, it all is bad. So all of a sudden, you find out that Gaia could potentially become mortal, which as soon as that happened, I'm like, what the fuck are you even talking about? And I'm pretty sure I wrote it in all caps. So. Somewhere on my little sheet here. I'm like, how is that? Why is that a thing? And then, yeah, so if she dies, then the Earth dies.
Mm-hmm.
And if she can be usurped by someone, like a conqueror such as Zarm, then that's, again, there are a lot of, the stakes are higher than we initially thought. Like, at first we were like, we're trying to save the planet. But instead it's like, you have to save the planet. You cannot deviate from your mission. If you do, all is lost. But in, like, a very different kind of way. Like, if you fucked up the planet in some way, you've got a little more time. But if, like, Gaia just dies, then the Earth is just over?
Peace is important. I think, well, this is the message of, like, nuclear annihilation, though, right?
People,
high stakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess what bothered me, too, is I would be willing to accept that if the Planeteers turn somehow, become evil, that corruption affects Gaia, weakens her, or makes her mortal. I can accept that if there's sort of, if they ground it in something or establish it somehow. But really, here, so the plot here is Zarm.
But it
saying,
wasn't like, but it didn't establish it or ground it at all. They were just saying it.
And they're not going bad. They're sort of, it's a combination of Zarm hypnotizing them, making them more aggressive and competitive, and then tricking them and saying, you're going to use these enhanced powers to destroy nuclear weapons.
Right.
So their intent never really wavers from being what they think is good.
Right.
They're just all amped up and roided out and
but
raging
the
on their new powers.
The intention of doing good is not the same as doing good.
Well, that's true. But I just think that the corruption isn't pervasive enough to, it shouldn't, I don't know, the consequence of making Gaia mortal because the Planeteers have, I guess, betrayed the path of peace. They haven't really.
And it was such an odd, it was an odd stake to bring up. Like, I'm not sure why we even need to have that. Because, like, it didn't necessarily...
Or have the others actually go bad and Mati redeem them or something.
Right. Like, really, if you're going to go that route, then let's go that route. Don't just add it as, like, a strange plot point that makes no sense in a very, like, convoluted, silly episode as it is.
I think if this episode was 3 episodes and thought out more carefully, it could have been cool.
Like a part 1, 2, and 3?
Yes.
I agree.
I don't understand
this. Speaking of which,
well, they
remember
would've
this?
Done it right.
Anytime a cartoon, when I was a kid, and this was often happened with the X-Men cartoon that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I would get nervous if it was obvious the plot wasn't going to resolve itself in the 20 minutes and there was going to be a to be continued and I was going to have to wait another week to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I'm so glad we don't have to deal with that shit anymore. Except for, you know, Game of Thrones, I guess.
Except, like, most television. Like, really? I mean, if they really wanted to. Like, you have to, whatever, the series. Yeah. So, so all of a sudden we're finding out that Gaia, like, Gaia then becomes fully mortal because they've so deviated from the path of peace. And they're hanging out at this missile base, like, just ripping shit up and destroying everything. And they're like, okay, well, you got to get rid of these missiles because otherwise it's going to be a real problem. But,
I mean,
that's going to incite a war.
That's true. But this is interesting because what year is this airing?
90.
90. Okay. Yeah. So this must be when it's a little before the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, but that's 91.
Oh.
But I mean, this is happening, right? The anti-nuclear movement is happening in the 70s, 80s, 90s.
And
but I think it really ramps up in the early 90s as with particularly the UN efforts to ratify the Test Ban Treaty to eliminate nuclear weapons. So this is in the Cold War's is it still raging in 90? No,
because
like
the fall of the Soviet Union is 91, I think. So
yeah,
that's imminent.
This is imminent, but I think this is a big topic about what to do with nuclear weapons, right?
Right.
In 90-91.
Yeah.
And apparently all you have to do is just send the Planeteers to a missile base and they'll destroy them.
Get rid of them.
And then everything will be fine. Not true, because Gaia shows up in full mortal garb and full, like, they're like, oh, she looks like us now, which, like, they could see her from afar because she was trying to stop them with Guy by her side. And they're like, oh, shit, there she is. What is she doing here?
There's a last-ditch effort before she becomes fully mortal. So she becomes increasingly mortal as each of the four planeteers, mm-hmm. Namati, uses their powers to try to wipe out the missiles on this base. And the first two to do it are Guy and Linka,
mm-hmm.
which is a little bit weird because Wheeler is for sure the most eager. But they're the first two, and they cause a lot of devastation and destruction on this base. And then so there's a last-ditch effort that Mati makes to convince Kwame and Wheeler to not use their powers in the same way. And it's like he uses his heart communicator to reach out to them and say, guys, don't do this. And Wheeler's just like, nah, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then Zarm is like, they're on my side now or whatever. And then it was the lamest effort at convincing them not to do what they were doing.
It just took no time at all for all of this stuff to go so horribly wrong. And like, it just really, I was just like, seriously, okay, fine, whatever. And then like, ultimately, Guy is able to convince them not to do it after there was like, didn't Zarm like do something and there was some like rubble that fell?
Yeah, he attacked her directly.
Right. So like some stuff fell on her.
And she bled.
She bled. She didn't break anything though, which I thought was
looked like she was gonna be. Is she
gonna lose that leg? Like that's
yeah. Well, and it was so she had stolen the orb that is like the planet vision from Zarm's ship.
Yeah,
and so when Zarm convince. Creates a rock slide that you think it buries her because the camera cuts to the planeteers and the orb that she'd been holding rolls like out and you don't see her at all and it's like, is she toast?
Right.
When it turned, no, she just got cut on her leg.
No, she just got like her leg sandwiched between two rocks, apparently. Like, that's basically what happened to her.
That's true. And I think she was briefly unconscious, and when she wakes up, the white bunny is looking in her face.
So Gaia is bleeding, and everybody's freaking out because it's like, oh shit, she's like a real person now, and this is going to be a real problem. Human thing. And then, like, Zarm reappears, and he's like, ha ha ha, I totally, like, schooled all you dumb buttheads, and what are you going to do about it? But then, like, do they all just start taking off the gloves then? And they're like, no, we're not going to do this anymore.
Yeah.
So, like, it was, again, it was pretty quick. Like, there's no sort of, like, and they don't even yell at him, really. They're just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
There's a couple of, again, more nonsense plot decisions that maybe they were just rushed. I don't know. But, so, yeah, they start taking off their gloves, their Nintendo Power gloves,
mm-hmm.
and saying they're not going to help Zarm anymore. And he says, well, I'll just start the war myself.
Yeah, he's like, then I'll just do it myself. So then I'm like, why didn't you just do that in the first place? What is going on? And I wrote, if he could have fired the missiles himself, then why did he need the kids?
Exactly.
That's what I wrote down. So,
nonsense.
Like, this whole episode was so stupid.
Yes.
Like, he could have just shown up. He could have landed, destroyed an island, which would have been awesome. He would have loved it. Then he would have just, like, so he has, like, a little, like, whole thing in his little spaceship where he can just, like, hit a button
mm-hmm.
and then start war.
Right. So they have to stop. And the other thing, and the thing that really bothered me more than anything else in the episode was this. And we kind of skipped over it, but a little bit before this. So the kids have removed their rings. They cannot summon Captain Planet.
Mm-hmm.
He, nonetheless, somehow imprisons Captain Planet in, like, an energy matrix on his ship.
Right.
From wherever Captain Planet is when he's not on Earth,
right.
he imprisons him.
Right.
And so after he's going to start the war himself, the kids have to, quote, rescue Captain Planet. And the way they do that is just summon him like normal.
Right. So
they didn't have to do anything special to retrieve him from this prison.
The energy prison isn't a very good prison.
Totally useless.
Yeah.
It's just he's somewhere else instead of where he would ordinarily be before summoned.
This was confusing. It seemed like the energy matrix was like ice. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on that I was like, well, this seems like a legitimate operation, but no, it's not. Like, all the kids had to do was just
But then again, it's not that easy to get the Planeteers to summon him. I mean, that's pretty unique. Only five people working together in the whole world can break him out of this energy matrix.
But they also really love summoning him because they can't get shit done by themselves.
Yeah. I just, there was no extra operation.
Useless episode. So, I mean, everything about it is just useless. There's no reason to even have this episode. Like, the more that I think about it, they just wanted, like, Sting just wanted to do, like, be a voice, and they were like, let's create a stupid episode around Sting.
I mean, ultimately, this episode is about nuclear weapons, right? And so then I was kind of thinking, like, how is this linked to environmentalism?
Yeah.
There's clearly nuclear energy is an issue, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about nuclear weapons and peace versus war.
Right. Well, and their whole thing was like, right, I think this episode was convoluted in its mission of what it actually wanted to do. Like, did it want to talk? Because it talked about needing to work together. It talked about sharing. It talked about nuclear war. It talked about the need to save the planet.
That's true. And it did, it combated this idea that like technology or techno-solutionism can solve environmental problems. And this, the idea is, no, you can't escape to a new planet. You can't solve this with new technology.
Right.
It does, it touches on that issue, but...
But it doesn't, like, it spreads its message too far and it touches too many different things, I think, to have a cohesive enough idea of what this episode's actually about. Because, like, every other episode has been very clear, like, this is what this one's about, and this is what this one's about, and this is what this one's about. But this one is, like, all over the fucking place. And it could be about any number of things. Just depends on what your interpretation is.
That's true.
But
I think it was
about being true to yourself.
Oh, well, I'm just back from a week in Pakistan where there was impending nuclear war. So
right.
I obviously took away the anti-nuclear war right. message rather strongly.
I don't think this episode did anything well.
Yeah.
Hot take.
No, I 100% agree with that. I think they were probably plotting out. I suspect we're going to see all of these villains that they've been building up, like mm-hmm. building a cast of villains are going to band together as sort of like an anti-planeteer, you know, eco-villain unit. And I think they're just trying to get Zarm in the field of play. But, but he should be this big epic character on a level with Gaia.
Yeah.
And they kind of just bungle it and make him this, you know, clownish thing.
Yeah. He really was clownish.
All right. So what? How is the villain defeated here? What happens?
They shoot him off into space. Like, well, because like, no, not even that. Like Gaia, like
Gaia's human.
She gets no. Ish. She's back to being Gaia.
How'd she get back to?
Because all the kids put their rings on and they were back on their mission.
They summon Captain Planet from the Matrix,
and then she's back
Gaia becomes
a
spirit again. Yeah. Captain Planet comes. There's a big baseball theme here.
Oh. Planet shoots the ball, the ship, into a volcano.
Yeah.
And then Zarm is gonna do whatever he's gonna do to like destroy the planet.
Right.
And then Gaia shoots energy at the volcano that launches him into the air.
And then he gets launched into the air, and then Captain Planet's there with like a tree trunk, and then he hits the spaceship ball up into space, out of the Earth's atmosphere. And then he's gone.
And there's a lot of baseball puns.
There's a lot of baseball puns because Captain Planet's back and he's a cheesy motherfucker.
Mm. He's out of this world now.
It might have been.
Mm. Okay. So.
Yeah. So that's how Zarm is defeated.
That's true. He like hits just, a home run
yep.
with the orb is the ball and it goes to outer space and then yep. we're done.
Yep.
And then we're done. And then to make matters more confusing, it's the Planeteer Alert time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And the first thing they say is, don't destroy the environment through graffiti.
Right. Again.
What the hell? It's almost like they spliced in the wrong alert.
Yes.
I was expecting, an anti-war message.
And it wasn't.
It was graffiti.
Right. It was don't litter and don't do graffiti.
Because even at the very end of the episode, when Gaia's like talking to the Planeteer, she does this whole thing of like, this is why peace is so important. And this is why we need to work together and share the Earth and all that stuff. And I was like, okay, that's a cohesive message with this like garbage episode. And then when the Planeteer Alert started, I'm like, no, that doesn't fit like what you were going for. There has to be a better one than this, than just like you rotten kids are going and graffitiing rocks
yeah.
and parks.
Or like dropping your ice cream cone on the ground or right. like your candy bar wrapper. Oh yeah, that's equivalent to stopping nuclear war.
Yeah, so just really weird and lazy stuff going on that I just hated this episode so much.
Y'all, we did... We skipped over my favorite little tidbit of total nonsense from this episode, which is when Mati and Gaia has become mortal and Mati and Gaia need to go to the island or wherever the others are trying to blow up this this base. Mati says, I'll get us a ride. And he uses his power and two dolphins show up.
And he gets two dolphins. Oh, Lisa Frank dolphins appear again.
I know.
What the fuck? He can do that?
this is also an aside, but has anyone been following this, like, Russia has all of the orca whales captured in several pens? No, you have not. This is insane. Somehow, like, a week ago.
Allegedly.
No, I've seen video, and they're, like, freezing. It's apparently very cold right now in Russia. So, the headlines say Putin. I don't know if Putin himself is directly involved in this, but there are something like 90 orca whales, free willies, in small little pens in Russia. This is, what? We're missing the whales in Seattle. You know, there's been this whole drama over, like, what to do. There are no whales. I don't know if they're the whales that should be in Seattle or not. Maybe they belong to different pods. But it's the same kind of whale.
And Russia's just captured 90 orcas?
Yes.
The hell?
I know. This is wild. Anyways, sorry.
These are wild times. And, you know, speaking of which.
I did like it just a little bit. This is one of those things where, I mean, I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about, other than thank goodness that nuclear war is no longer a threat, and that's something that we've totally resolved and we're fine and safe and it can't possibly happen.
Oh my gosh.
So aside from the fact that we really don't want nuclear war, I was curious because I feel like this is one of those things where I often forget who's got nuclear weapons, who's trying to get nuclear weapons, how many are there, where are they, what's actually going on. So I just did some light Googling, and this is from some organization called the Arms Control Association, but their data is sourced from the State Department. So they basically say there are 9 countries that currently have some stockpile of nuclear weapons. The US and Russia have more than 90% of all of them. The UK, France, Israel, India, Pakistan, China, and North Korea have the others. And I was sort of curious just about, like, I mean, how many are out there? You know, we're supposed to be not making more and also whittling down and getting rid of the ones that we've got. So the U.S. has about 6,500.
What?
Russia has about 6,800. The others, far fewer. The U.K., this is 215. France, 300. Israel, 80. India, 135. Pakistan, 145. China, 280. And North Korea, 15.
Brief history is post-fall of the Soviet Union, 91. There was, like, a lot of international support in denuclearizing, right? And so this is a big 90s topic. 96, nuclear weapons are ruled illegal by the International Court of Justice. That's the same year the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty was adopted by the UN. And, you know, it flares up a little bit in the late 90s when India and Pakistan do some public tests of their nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. And so this is where you see kind of the global dynamic change. But then I feel like we hear nothing about, not nothing, but it's not a big topic until recently. Mm-hmm. We have, actually, this is, I think, a big concern about Donald Trump, an existential threat of nuclear war, and all of these discussions, particularly with North Korea. This happened this week, right? They kind of arguably failed summit in Vietnam between North Korea and the U.S. in attempts to denuclearize. And we have this conflict flaring up between India and Pakistan over the line of control in Kashmir, where, again, the kind of existential threat of nuclear war seems to have bubbled to the top of the international conversation. So I feel like this is an interesting moment for us to be watching this episode, because it does feel like the conflict and the concern about nuclear weapons has kind of bubbled to the top of the consciousness here, like it was in the 90s. Where are we? Probably the same place. I guess there was progress in the mid 90s, but.
Right. But, like, but how much progress given, like, how things are currently?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we're all still here. Okay. So, like, generally not a good episode. No one really liked it.
No. And
I'm like, the if the plot had been clearer, if these weird little things hadn't happened on the side where, like, there's questions about the origin of the spirits of Earth and the fact that Gaia can be mortal if things go haywire, and, like, it could have been a good episode if there weren't distractions like that. I think
if it had been a 3-part season finale that played upon, like, tensions that had built between the Planeteers over the course of the season, maybe Linka and Wheeler.
That would have been excellent.
They could have really laid a foundation for the scale of what this ought to have been. And it just was, for episode 6, in 20 minutes, it wasn't there.
Yeah, and I mean, they're all, like, still kind of getting to know each other, but getting along generally.
Yeah.
And there's not been any situation where other than the fact that he could hypnotize them into being assholes, Like, they weren't going to be assholes to each other like that or competitive. So, no. Just didn't work.
No.
It's a hit and a miss. Or swing and a miss, rather.
Thank you.
So.
Keep the baseball.
Just got to keep it going. Got to pull a Captain Planet over here.
Yeah. Captain Planet's a lefty, it seems.
He did take his baseball swings from the left.
Well, I'm left-handed, but I do not swing left-handed. So.
Same, as am I.
Fun facts. Also, you said Captain Planet is a lefty, and I can't help but think this is what people must think when they saw this episode. I mean, the whole series, of course, is real, real lefty. Environmental propaganda for our youth. This is how we ended up with millennials, people.
Barbara
Pyle.
This is
how we ended up with millennials?
Barbara Pyle and Ted Turner created millennials.
and don't forget Mr. Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
This is a real thing.
But he affected other generations, not just millennials.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Like, I mean, he's been around for a long time. Yeah.
But this is
you saw the documentary.
I know. In the documentary, this is a whole thing though, where in recent times, because his whole message was like, you're special, you're loved.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
And so in recent times, people.
Okay.
I think you're saying that Mr. Rogers created snowflakes.
Yes. I think that's I'm not saying that. I think people have said that.
Wow.
I'm not agreeing. I agree. You're special and you are loved,
now
listeners.
That's a hot take.
I can say that because our 5 listeners are members of my family. Friends and family.
And they'll love you just the same because you're special.
Thanks, friends.
And on that note, we're going to wrap up this episode of a terrible episode of Captain Planet. We'll be back soon, promise, with new hot takes and commentary. And
Episode 6, Save the Elephants.
That's going to be episode seven. I'm excited about this one. And it introduces a villain. I know nothing more than this, but the villain of the next episode's name is Luton Plunder. So
yeah.
I seem to remember, Errol, you liked those lyrics from the theme song.
They're the greatest.
They actually name a villain Luton Plunder.
If I don't like this villain, I'm going to be very disappointed.
You're going to. I feel good about episode 7.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, then on all of this, thanks for listening again. Bye for now.
Bye.
Farewell.